Okay, we're live. So welcome to the inaugural Mitako Talks. This is a new event that we'll be holding every 2 weeks. The next one will be on December 11th at 14:30. We'll have Sal Tonello, who leads crypto for KPMG, and that one will be hosted by our CEO, Adrian Tricani. The recordings will be able to be found, can be found on our website, so please share. And should point out, this is a live conversation. Please, interactive. We've enabled the Q&A in the chat, so please comment, ask questions. So let's kick off. So for our inaugural event, I'm very proud to say we have a special guest, one of the top German economists, Professor Dr. Philipp Sandner. He is the head of the Frankfurt School Blockchain Center at the Frankfurt School of Finance and Management, and also the head of the Blockchain Association, the International Token Standard Association, and the Multi-Chain Asset Managers Association. Philipp, welcome.
Thanks very much. Thanks for inviting me, and happy to talk about, I don't know, all kinds of crypto this morning.
Now, excellent. So, Phil, I mean, I gave a brief headline introduction, but if you just say a few comments about yourself and your background, it would be great. Thanks.
Yes, exactly. Of course. So, you know, I'm running or I'm heading the Frankfurt School Blockchain Center. That's an academic think tank sitting at the Frankfurt School of Finance and Management. This is a university in Germany ranking among the top five business schools in Germany. In Europe, we are among the top 10, depending on various metrics. Of course, I think it's a good university, even though, of course, not everybody knows us because we are quite small. We do not have a history of 500 years like University of Heidelberg, for example. And we founded a blockchain center as an, let's call it center for blockchain and DLT stuff back 4 years ago. And we are focusing on three things. The first topic is crypto assets, primarily Bitcoin, Ethereum, and also standardization and categorization of all these tons of tokens out there. Then second, the digital programmable euro. Other people would call it CBDC. And the third one is digital securities and security tokens, which is now really becoming a dynamic topic in Germany. And the fourth topic is basically coming up on the horizon now, since it really gained some momentum. That's the, let's call it, tokenization of everything topic, primarily inspired by Liechtenstein and the Liechtenstein Token Act, which is far more reaching than what we see in other legislations and also by the European Union. So they are really inspiring what Liechtenstein is doing there.
Thanks, Phil. I mean, that's quite a range. I mean, I think we can cover some of those topics. Wish we had longer than 30 minutes, but I think it's a great, we can definitely start. You know, we've obviously seen a huge run-up this year, and more particularly probably in the last 2 months in crypto markets. Bitcoin, I think, was one of the main drivers, as we all know, and that's kind of broadened, I think, of the last few weeks. We have had a correction, but I think it's been a significant move up. What would you put this down to? Is it sustainable, or are we looking at, is this 2017, 2018, is a flash of pan the gain, or is this something different now?
Yeah, that's a good question, and actually nobody knows. So therefore, what we are saying here is, of course, speculation to some degree, and it's, of course, not an investment advice. I think that's pretty clear. But I think we are seeing here the uprise of blockchain technology, and with it, we are also seeing the uprise of Bitcoin as like one of the key commodities for the next century. And the key mistake what people are doing also in the media is basically displaying the Bitcoin price with an normal y-axis. But you, in financial markets, you have to some degree also think about putting a logarithm on the y-axis. And then you see very nicely the upwards trend, which is basically in, out there and intact since 6 years. It did not break for whatever reason. And therefore, yes, we see some volatility on the midterm, you know, like that's within 6 months or 1 year or 2 year, it's going up and down in these terms. But on the longer run, say 3 years, 4 years, we are seeing an uprise of blockchain, of course, but also on for the Bitcoin. And therefore, in my mind, we will definitely see the Bitcoin price rising. That would be my opinion here. And why is this? Because we have, because supply is being shortened. We had the halvening event back in May. The next halvening event will happen in approximately 2 years. Then supply will again be shortened down. And at the same time, we have a shaky world. People are getting afraid of inflation. which leads some first US companies to exchange the US dollar in Bitcoin as their treasury, right? It's not a trend yet. It's some first occurrences, but it could become a trend, right? And even more so, that's more important, we see companies over the entire world building on-ramps for exchanging fiat money, that's euro and US dollar, into Bitcoins, right? PayPal is probably the largest one, but in Germany, we have had the launch of Börse Stuttgart digital exchange. Then in the summer, we had Bank Scheich, which was the first broker for institutional Bitcoin trading. Now, 1 week ago, we had the announcement of Bankhaus von der Heide from Munich and Blocksize Capital, who now jointly offer institutional Bitcoin investing services as of January. So wherever you look, you see on-ramps being built. The existing on-ramps, the crypto exchanges, of course, also work, but now we are having a new movement here. And this is a trend where we see institutional players, institutional financial organizations also building on-ramps for the institutional money. And if professional investors now start at least here and there to invest a little bit into money, into Bitcoin, then you immediately should see the price rise because they would invest larger sums of money, not as retailers would do. And taking this all together, I think that's clear signals that Bitcoin is in some kind of upwards trend together with blockchain technology. And of course, this is basically disturbed by short-term ups and downs and even midterm ups and downs. But on the long run, over years, I would still see a clear upwards trend. And therefore, I'm extremely optimistic for the next couple of years, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I very much share the view. Obviously, we've heard a lot of in the U.S. about corporates getting the space. MicroStrategy, Michael Saylor has been a great ambassador, probably one of the most vocal proponents now why Treasury should embrace this. I'd be very curious. I mean, one of the questions we always get asked is are banks getting involved in this space? And why should banks get involved? Are they seeing demand? I mean, clearly they cover corporates. There's a lot of, you mentioned number of fintechs, they're agile or smaller companies or smaller banks who get involved. How do you see the larger banks approaching the crypto markets?
Well, not at all, to be honest. The blockchain topic and Bitcoin is very often something for the smaller ones. That's for me, it's not very surprising that you first had retail customers. You know, there is no smaller unit than retail customers. Then you had first fintechs being launched. These fintechs are growing. The first fintechs should, in 3 days from now, you know, end of November, they should basically be approved by the BaFin in Germany to get their crypto license. And it will not be Commerzbank and Deutsche Bank who will get the license. It will be to some degree fintechs and crypto exchanges who will get this license. So that's, in my mind, a proof point that basically this technology and this movement is beneficial for smaller entities, which can act more dynamically and more larger. But the larger organizations are also now starting to pick up. They have more power, they have more volume, and they can afford to be a little bit slower because they are larger. Take Deutsche Börse, for example. That's one of the key players in Germany. They have now listed a couple of Bitcoin ETNs and ETPs and certificates in their trading segments. Same with Börse Stuttgart. That's two large-scale regulated entities which are now dealing indirectly or directly with Bitcoin. That's massive. And of course, you could expect that other banks, which are larger, are also starting to more heavily invest in knowledge in these domains, blockchain, and maybe also crypto assets. And therefore, I think we see it's a movement from smaller entities towards larger entities, whereas smaller entities are starting. And as I said, you know, Bankhaus Scheich in Frankfurt, that's a bank nobody knows, right? It's one of the very few small brokerage companies, but still they did it, right? They did it. And the same is true for Bankhaus, Bank von der Heide in Munich, they also did it. Nobody knows them. I think therefore the larger banks, they might join, but they are much more complex. They have larger risks. They have huge departments, many people. This will take more time.
Yeah, we always hear the refrain, they don't want to be first, but they're definitely not first anymore. There's a lot of movement, as you say. They can afford to be a bit slow, but you don't want to be too late in the space because it seems to be moving very rapidly. I mean, there's a lot of talk, obviously, not just about crypto, but tokenization. How do you see that sequencing? I mean, are there still impediments to tokenization? Is this actually happening now? How would you describe the environment for that right now?
I think tokenization will be one of the key trends for the next 5 years, maybe 6 years, maybe 7 years. And we are just getting started right now. You know, we are getting started with getting first securities being listed as tokens or being issued as tokens. In Germany, we had, I think, 10 or 15 security tokens. And therefore, I think it's also a movement where we now saw a first couple of experiments being done. But there is also a large misunderstanding, because very often people are thinking that securitization is the same like tokenization, but tokenization is actually much, much, much more. Of course, you can also put securities into tokens. This would then be security tokens, but you could put much, much, much more into tokens, so that tokenization will be a larger trend like securitization at some point of time. And we are just getting started here. In Germany, as of Q1, probably it will be possible to tokenize debt. That's basically a milestone, but this is not equity yet. So tokenizing equity will be much, much later. Tokenizing other things, you know, like say the car register, the real estate register and so on, this will take a couple of more years. So we are just seeing the beginning here. And the first experiments have been done with the existing regulation in place. Now we have regulation coming. This will allow standards, and therefore debt tokenization in Germany will be one of the key trends for next year, I would guess so. But we should also look to other countries. And for example, if you look to Switzerland, then you could tokenize nearly the entire world of finance there with the new law coming up. That's massive. And even more so, if you look to Liechtenstein, which is a tiny country out there, but in Liechtenstein, you not just can tokenize debt and equity, but you can really tokenize any right out there. The ownership of on art, the ownership on a car, the ownership on a diamond, the access right for an apartment, the access right for a real estate object for employees, you know, all these rights can be tokenized, because Liechtenstein is framing a token as being a digital representation of any right out there, not just debt as in Germany and not just debt and equity as in Switzerland, but really any right. This is, of course, Liechtenstein. It's a tiny country, but you can still do a lot because it's part of the European Economic Area. And therefore, I would expect that tokenization really picks up next year when basically the demand side, you know, that's companies who want to tokenize something, when the demand side really starts to understand what is possible in each country and what is not possible, and then basically see the benefit. And there is one sub trend, so to call it that way, which should also pick up next year, because once you're tokenizing real assets, I think this is an interesting area. Once you're starting to tokenize real assets, such as art, companies as well, commodities, gold, cars, all this stuff, when you tokenize real assets, then this would be a formidable protection against inflation, which would come to us maybe starting next year, maybe also later. And therefore, I would expect tokenization of real assets being a very interesting sub area, which should be quite picking up some dynamics next year. But again, you know, ask other people, then you get other opinions. That's to some degree speculation, but I could imagine that tokenization picks up next year. But you know how it is. Other people said that it picks up 2019. You know, it was last year and nothing picked up. So yeah. Let's see.
Well, clearly it seems to have a big future. I mean, the always question is when. I mean, one of the issues we always hear about is, you know, things like secondary liquidity. The markets are very fragmented. And there's always a lot of discussion about how that infrastructure should be built. Is it on public or permission ledgers? Do you think the choice of ledgers, whether it's this permissioned or public space, has an influence on liquidity in the end?
I think this needs to be sorted out. If you really talk about permissioned ledgers, there are some good projects underway. They are coming. And you could even call a Libra, Facebook's project Libra, a permissioned ledger to some degree. This morning I read that Libra will start next year with an US dollar stable coin launching to the market. So this would then be, I would say that this is a permissioned ledger, right? So we see some movements there, and the permissioned ledgers would then be very interesting once legacy companies are bringing their market reach to this ledger. Yeah, say Facebook saying, We are connecting our app, WhatsApp, or any kind of other app to this ledger for whatever reasons, payment, identity, and so on, then these permission ledgers can really pick up. But unless this happens, I would still be of the opinion that public blockchain systems have a much broader reach at this point of time. The number one system which is running out there is the public blockchain system Bitcoin. Number two is Ethereum. Number three might be Ripple or something else. And then there is coming nothing. And maybe at position number 10 or 20, there might come some permission ledgers out there. So permission ledger at this point of time have not taken over, definitely not. One of the key reasons here is basically the openness of Ethereum. Ethereum has basically compiled an ecosystem of, I would say, more than 100,000 people, maybe more than 150,000 people on the world doing something with Ethereum, founding companies, deploying smart contracts, doing education here and there. And this ecosystem being so open attracted so much young talent, such that you have some momentum going on in the Ethereum space, which cannot be replicated by any other system. If you would like to judge Hyperledger as a permission software, for example, I would say that there might be 10 or maybe 20,000 developers out there on the worldwide level, but I might be wrong, you know, that's a rough estimate. And if you talk about Corda, that might be maybe 5,000 developers, I don't know. But Ethereum, I would expect it to be around 100,000 people worldwide. That's really, really, really much. And it cannot be replicated by others. And it's due to the open source nature of this system and to the permissionless way of being structured, such that anybody out there, me, you, could today, right now, sit down and get connected to the Ethereum chain without asking anybody for permission to join this network. In my mind, this is extremely powerful. And therefore, I think Ethereum makes a good case. It stays like this. We have to hope that Ethereum 2.0 does not lead to severe issues with the system. But if this is then happening, then we see Ethereum being probably or remaining the number one of public blockchain systems. But what is your opinion, Seamus? You are also talking to a hell lot of companies. Would you also judge this way or different?
I think very much so. I mean, I think the mindshare argument is significant, basically, around the mindshare investment in terms of public chains, things like Ethereum. I mean, there's a lot of investment from developer minds being focused on this. Versus, as you mentioned, the private companies running the other ones. I mean, clearly these things can coexist. I think they have different use cases longer term. To me, basically, the public chain space is really revolutionary, and the permission chains is really more evolutionary about creating more efficiencies rather than changing things. So as you said, I mean, opening up to a completely open framework is really flattens the world in many ways. So I think that's really where the revolution is, as opposed to closed semi-permissioned groups or semi-trusted groups. One of the things I would say in the space that I view as a limitation so far is really the fact that you have one side. I mean, we have the, as you mentioned, the regulations and the technologies falling into place to tokenize, but you still need the side to settle against. So I see one of the first use cases gaining traction is really on the payment side. And you mentioned Libra, so tokenized payments, which obviously eventually extrapolate into tokenized central bank currencies, I think. How do you see that market evolving? I mean, Libra is potentially coming, as you said, soon. Obviously, with the network effect of that currency of Libra can bring to a stablecoin could be significant, but we have already seen since the start of the year. I think earlier this year, in January, stablecoins were about $5 billion in the market. Now they're, I think, almost $23 billion. So we've seen a rapid rise in adoption of stablecoins. How will this market evolve with what we've seen so far, Libra coming, and a lot of experimentation in the CBDC space? How do you see that space evolving?
That's a fascinating area. I call it the digital euro area, or the digital programmable euro, actually. And what I would like to say here is that we have to very clearly disentangle the different levels on which this discussion takes place. We have the, let's call it, discussion on the level of the European Central Bank or the central banks in general. That's where we would like to see a digital euro being issued. That's where we would like to see more speed and so on. But the fact is that the European Central Bank will only be able to launch such an CBDC maybe in the year of 2028 or later. That's 8 years from now, maybe 7 years from now on, because it's really a big, a large project, right? And therefore, we should not expect too much coming from the ECB, because such projects will take years to be developed. And therefore, to basically imagine how a CBDC should look like, to discuss how it should be designed, how the architecture is, and so on, to some degree doesn't make sense, because it's 8 years ahead. And who knows what happens in 8 years. You know, like in that's 8 years, Bitcoin will be aged 20 years, and yeah. Ethereum will be aged, I don't know, plus minus 13 years. I will be 48 then, and so on. So, you know, 8 years, it's really, really, really a long time. Imagine where we are coming from in the blockchain area. And therefore, discussing this design options for a CBDC for a world in 2028, in my personal opinion, does make sense. But very often people are doing it for basically this, moving this topic forward. But what I would like to focus here is that basically the key organizations which are pushing this topic right now, and which actually have to push it, are private organizations. That's commercial banks, which are discussing how to, for example, get the euro on a blockchain system. Switzerland is moving quite fast here, but we also see other countries moving quite fast here. In Germany, we are in discussion mode, but that's quite good, because it's also quite quite good discussions happening also with the German Central Bank, right? So private companies are being demanded here. They need to take action, and this also includes Facebook's Project Libra, because they would like to be a payment infrastructure, plugging, for example, the US dollar as a stable coin on top of it, apparently as of next year, right? And therefore, in case we are talking about digital programmable money, then it will be commercial banks and regulated financial organizations which will be acting here. It will not necessarily be the ECB or other central banks, but we see that China and other central banks, for example, also Singapore and Canada, they are quite developing this topic quite fast. And therefore, in such countries, of course, it makes sense to call for the central bank to take action. And like in China, to basically ask the central bank in a public-private partnership to issue a Chinese digital version of the currency, right? It does make sense there, but in Europe, with the ECB not taking up this topic very dynamically, it does not make sense to call for the ECB to take action, because it's just 8 years ahead, right? And therefore, we need to disentangle the, let's call it, level of the economies. That's the level of the central banks, and we have to disentangle on the other side the commercial and the private sector, who is in charge of taking action and actually who will produce first solutions which launch next year. And the last remark I would like to make is actually, where would we like CBDCs to be needed for? Why do we need the digital euro actually? And I think there are four or five domains here which does make sense. First of all, and everything related to the capital market makes sense. So trading of securities, issuing securities, all this stuff would be much more efficient with a digital euro or another digital currency. Then secondly, the industrial sector, that's manufacturing, logistics, supply chain, and all these use cases in the B2B world would strongly benefit from a digital programmable euro. Then third, we would have international payment or remittances, which could also happen between retail people, between private individuals, where lots of benefits could be gotten, right? But this excludes national retail payments, right? So I'm sending money to my pizzeria for purchasing a pizza, or to my friend for, I don't know, 10 euro there. There is not much to benefits from a digital euro on the private level, on a national level, right? So when it comes to remittances, international payments, then there is a case for the digital programmable euro. And there are two more areas. One is the area of the machine economy. Very soon we will not connect things like sensors and machines to the internet, but we will also allow them to transact in payments. You know, that's the autonomous car, which is also executing payments. That's a case for the digital programmable euro. And finally, the crypto world is also an interesting case for the digital programmable euro or dollar, because take the decentralized finance ecosystem, this would not exist as now in case there would be no digital dollar, right? everything relies and on the Tether and the US dollar coin and other US dollar stable coins, and everything is measured in US dollar there. So DeFi to some degree also relies on legacy currencies. And this domain, the crypto assets, shows how fascinating it really works. For example, trading into assets, trading out of assets in a seamless way once you have the payment means, the dollar, on a blockchain. So that's in my mind the key domains where a digital programmable euro makes sense. So cross-border payments on an international level, the industrial area, then the capital market area, not the private individual area on a national level, and the world of crypto assets for on-chain settlement. I think that's in my mind domains where we really can expect some need and growth for the digital programmable euro, but not necessarily for the CBDCs. This really depends on the speed of the central banks, which is really varying in multiple countries. Sorry for this long answer.
No, there's a lot to go on there. I wish we had much longer, but I mean, I would unpack one of the terms you've referenced a couple of times. You mentioned programmable money, and I know you've written a paper on this, programmable money and programmable payments. Could you define each and differentiate them? Describe the differences?
Can you repeat of what currency?
No, you mentioned a few times in the context of the euro, programmable money. And I know you've written some papers around the difference and defining and the difference between programmable money and programmable payments. Can you talk to that a little bit about how you see those differences?
Yeah, that's interesting. So this is basically arising through the world of smart contracts, and it's very much inspired by the way Ethereum is allowing smart contracts. So what are smart contracts on Ethereum exactly doing? Smart contracts on Ethereum are allowing to program money flows. Yeah, that's an interest payment, that's an escrow account, that's loans and other things. This is what we, as my co-authors and I, typically call programmed payments, focusing on programming payments. But then there is also programmable money. It sounds very similar, but it's different. This means that you can basically configure money such that it cannot flow everywhere. So you might restrict money flows such that they cannot flow to sanctioned parties, or such that they cannot flow to criminal addresses, right? Or wallet addresses where you know that they are maybe related to criminal activities, right? So programmable money is related to money being configured such that you attach information to the money and you control the money flow, and the money cannot flow everywhere, for example. That's whitelisting and blacklisting of addresses, which is sometimes required. And you might need to attach information to money, for example, a receipt for accounting reasons, for taxation. You know, what is now the value added tax of this payment? Is it 6% or 8%? Nobody knows. So that's the first two cases, to program money flows and configuring money. That's a huge difference. And then arising from the smart contracts from Ethereum, there is a third very important aspect here. That's basically the minting of tokens, which is required for tokenization, such that you can, of course, mint a euro token on Ethereum, but you can also mint a security, you can also mint another right, you can mint art pieces and all kinds of other things, all tokens on one and the same DLT network, right? And this is also allowed by smart contracts. This is not now related to payments, but it allows the tokenization. And if you have multiple assets on one DLT network, then you can seamlessly trade from one asset into the other. And then you can get rid of clearinghouses, for example, because the trading is being organized by, let's call it, escrow or settlement smart contracts, right? And these three functions, in my mind, are crucial also for the world of payments. But it really took us a while to understand these three aspects of smart contracts, and then to differentiate between configurable money and programming money flows.
It sounds like it'd have a very potentially very large impact on market infrastructure, market structure, basically as we know it so far, basically. banks, et cetera. You know, we only have probably less than about a minute left. I just want to wrap up with the last question. It's too bad we don't have longer time. I think we've talked for quite a bit about this subject, but just how do you see basically the evolution of things happening in Europe versus the US? I mean, what do you expect for 2021 in this space? Is there going to be any big breakthroughs in one place versus the other?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I would like to sit down over Christmas and write a short article, what would be my thoughts about 2021. And thinking about this, we see steady growth in areas such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, and DeFi, decentralized finance. Then we will see very dynamic movements in the area of the digital programmable euro, but also in other currencies. Then I would expect that tokenization is really picking up, and tokenization is being moving a little bit away from securitization because tokenization is broader than securitization. Then maybe we do some first steps in the area of identity management, but this is strongly regulated by governments. Therefore, this might take a little bit longer. And I think that would be the key developments. And Libra probably will finally enter the market as expected for this year. That would be probably the top expectations for next year. And since there might be inflation threats being coming to us with all the debt rising and money being printed by the central banks, I would also expect the real assets to pick up. Real assets, that's tokenized art pieces, tokenized real estates, and tokenizing everything, which is real assets, and the prices of commodities, including Bitcoin. Therefore, I would also expect Bitcoin to rise next year. And honestly, I would expect that it rises significantly, maybe touching $50,000 next year, maybe even touching $100,000 next year. Let's see. But there is so much going on. Supplies has been shortened. Demand is increasing. We have a shaky world. Debt, money supply, and so on. This should drive crypto assets upwards, I would guess. So
it's a positive view, positive outlook. I would say it's very similar to my own. Basically, it's been exciting to see the impact of just bringing PayPal into the market and bringing 346 million. New wallets potentially into this space. And I wonder what the impact's going to be when we bring 2 billion Facebook users. So it looks like we'll have a lot of work ahead of us, positive year next year. And listen, Philip, thank you very much for joining today. It's been an interesting conversation. We'd love to do it again. So just wrapping up, I would say we mentioned we will be having another Mataco Talks in 2 weeks' time, December 11th at 14:30 CET, so Swiss time. Sal Trinello, who leads crypto for KPMG, will be joining, and Adrian Tricani, our CEO, will be hosting. Thanks again for joining.
Thanks much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks much. Goodbye. Bye.